Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
This is special Election Eve coverage on NPR News, and we're curious about what experienced political strategists are hearing from their friends on the campaigns and the voters that they've been talking to. We're turning first to Mike Zipko. He's the founder of Zipko Strategies and a former GOP campaign staffer and strategist. And Mike, good to talk to you again. I bet you got a sense of deja vu when you heard Angela Davis on the air, because we all worked together at Channel 5 at one point, right?
I know. It's a great alumni club to be a part of, isn't it?
Good to have you on today.
Thank you.
So you've worked in and observed a lot of Minnesota elections. If I asked you to throw out an adjective that you think defines this election in Minnesota, not nationally, what words come to mind?
Some of it is hard to predict because of how divided the state is when you have the core cities versus the suburbs versus greater Minnesota. It's, you know, a little bit of that. I also, the other thing I think is interesting is there's a nationalization going on. When you look at the second and the third congressional districts and their potential impact on legislative races, can you nationalize a state house race? You know, because, you know, people may not like Eric Paulson. Would that mean are they not going to vote for Republicans in the Minnesota legislature? And on the other hand, it's in some of the other places, can you get enough votes in greater Minnesota to balance out what are, you know, kind of the baked in Democratic numbers from Minneapolis and St. Paul? But I think the nationalization thing is going to be interesting to see, you know, with a history of ticket splitting in Minnesota. Will people, you know, go all the way down one red or blue when they vote, or will they say, I like my House member at the Minnesota legislature, but I'm you know, going to vote for a Democrat in Congress? Some of that stuff is going to be interesting to see, and it's awfully hard to model all this stuff.
I know.
The more data you have is great, but, you know, it's hard to know, you know, if people are being honest with what they tell you from phone calls and polling.
You know, I'm going to talk to some pollsters about that a little later, Mike. But you bring up this ticket splitting thing, and I'm glad you did, because we have Alexander in Eagan on the line. Alexander, you're thinking about splitting a ticket. Is that right?
Yes. You know, my experience or just paying attention just tells me there's really good people on both sides of the aisle. Congressman Emmer is talking about a balanced budget amendment. I don't hear that from the Democrats. I agree with that other guy that called saying that if Clinton was president, we would still have a big, fat, bloated military budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to find, before I vote, who's going to balance the budget, who's going to get stop wasting money, and more importantly, who's going to treat people with dignity and respect.
I have to say, Alexander, if I may, you are fairly unusual in ticket splitting. Mike, I think voters will tell you that they're interested in doing that, but we know that, because the statistics tell us, that most people run the ticket.
Yeah, it's hard to know. And then the other thing, too, I think this kind of sets, and it's kind of interesting that it's a 20-year anniversary of Governor Ventura's election.
Oh, no.
Minnesotans it's kind of like a passive-aggressive thing. Minnesotans don't want to tell people often what they really think because they're afraid of offending someone when they call or knock on your door. But I think the ultimate kind of counter to passive-aggressive Minnesotanness is when you get into the voting box and decide, hey, I'm going to do something different. Or, I'm not going to tell people that I'm voting for Trump or a Republican because most of my friends may not like that. There's going to be some of that, too. And I don't know how you can engage that going into things. But there's definitely, that's what happened 2 years ago. If you looked at those numbers, you know, the idea that President Trump got that close in Minnesota really played in the fact a lot of people either didn't tell people they were voting mm-hmm. for Trump or showed up without, you know, outside of a model and
yeah,
did it.
That's so, right.
You know, there's a bit of that.
I'm hearing from a lot of people on Twitter who are upset at this idea that there isn't that much difference between Republicans and Democrats. Joan says, your caller who said voting doesn't matter because the government runs itself is taking democracy for granted at a time when our democracy is most at risk. And Joe says, Ray, one of your last callers, people who say there's no difference between the Dems and Repubs are typically privileged white males who don't have to worry about it. Steph, off the live blog.
Joe says, I live in a heavily one-party district in Minneapolis proper. I see one party's candidates as clearly having a better governing agenda should they obtain power. These are vital statewide spots like the governor, the AG, and the two Senate seats, one of which is a toss-up. Whether you agree with my societal values or oppose them, Election Day is the one day we all get to flip the script and govern the people who govern us on their terms.
Mike, I have a question about your campaign experience. When you've worked on campaigns that were this close or you could kind of see momentum building for the opposite candidate, whose job was it to tell the candidate themselves that this didn't look good or, oh my gosh, it's going to be so tight, settle down, you know, that kind of thing? What's that like?
They're very uncomfortable conversations. I think you owe it to the – well, but you also owe it to the candidates. Say, you know, in some sense, you keep some information to yourself because it's the – you know, projecting the optimism. It's awfully hard to tell somebody, hey, by the way, you're down 4 points and you're going to lose.
Right.
When you still have to go out there and make that case at the end, you just don't know. And also, I think part of it is not overreading the information that you have. It's giving you trend lines. But on the other hand, you know, when you look at other campaigns, you know, I can tell you, you know, 20 years ago, walking across river, the St. Paul Hotel, the old Radisson Hotel in St. Paul with Charlie Weaver, when Jesse Ventura got predicted by NBC as winning Minnesota. I mean, no one's you felt it happening. I don't think anybody thought that was going to be the case. So
no way.
I don't know. I mean, there's a bit of that, but it's also part of it is the strength of your team. I mean, do you have good people that you can trust and be in different lanes in a campaign that are going to tell you the right things and let each person do what they do best? I mean, if your job as a candidate is to go out there and convince people that I'm the person you should pick, you got to give them the best chance to be as good at that as they can be, you know. And in some cases, though, you do have to be realistic, and it is really tough. I mean, it's a job interview in front of everybody.
Yeah. So remind me. I think you were on Norm Coleman's campaign for governor, right? The year that Jesse won. Do I remember that right?
Absolutely. I campaigned for Norm and a campaign for Charlie Weaver, and you know, it was a very interesting race. And you know, and just talking about that with someone this morning, being in Anoka on the Halloween parade and watching the Ventura the motorhome caravan come in and see that energy, it made really gave you a pause. But I can also remember watching when Jesse Ventura would go to northern Minnesota and campaign up there, and you watch the numbers in the eighth switch from
right.
away from Skip Humphrey.
Right.
I mean, some of the things you're seeing in Minnesota now are not new. I mean, the eighth, the likelihood that Stauber could win tomorrow, that's been something that's a long time coming. You know, in terms of, you know, that when you look at the makeup there of the southern part of the 8th Congressional District. But there's some of that stuff nationally. I think that Minnesota really aligns a lot. Like, greater Minnesota is a lot like part of, you know, greater parts of the United States. The suburbs are a battleground, and Minneapolis and St. Paul are pretty hardcore Democrat. And you have a kind of a makeup of the three. And to win statewide in Minnesota, if you're a Republican, it's really hard because you have to find a way to overcome the voter impact of the Minneapolis and St. Paul areas being so traditionally strong for the BFL.
I think you've made a really good point about Minnesota being the microcosm of what we're seeing, you know, the dimensions of this playing out in many, many other states across the country. It kind of gives us a broader sense of where we fit into this and why voters are feeling like they are in certain parts of Minnesota. Let me grab a call here from Derek in Plymouth. Hey, Derek, thanks so much for waiting. Hi.
Hey, no problem. Thanks, Gary, for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was just responding to some of the Debbie Downer calls or text messages you got earlier from people complaining about a sense of obligation and foreboding for this election. And I'm just letting you know that I'm a Trump supporter and I'm voting with a sense of optimism. Consumer confidence is at 18-year lows, mm-hmm. unemployment record lows for Hispanic and Black communities, along with everyone else. So I think things are going in the right direction. Sure, the tweets, I enjoy the tweets. I think they're hilarious. But as far as the president goes, and I think everything's heading the right direction. So
you're voting
for more of the same.
Keep it going, more of the same. I like what I'm seeing.
Exactly.
Okay. Yep. Mike, these might be, I think as Derek also points out, we didn't see this coming in 2016. These might be the very voters that you suggested won't necessarily tell pollsters, that kind of thing. I'm glad Derek's willing to tell us on the air, but there are some voters that don't want to say that.
absolutely. I think there's part of that. And also, I think there's a bit of a resentment, too, of people wagging their finger in someone's face saying, if you vote for Trump, you're a bad person. It almost drives people to do the exact opposite, which means that they're more committed to the other side, one side or the other. Because one of the things I think that gets lost in the intensity of all this stuff is skilled persuasion. I mean, this is a base election where it's basically I'm trying to get my army out to have more people show up than your army. It's not about persuasion. But in case of, you know, I think it was shocking to Democrats to see Trump's numbers in Minnesota. But if you talk to people in greater Minnesota, they felt frustrated. They felt, you know, that people in the Twin Cities, especially, you know, with certain, you know, people in Democratic leadership saying to greater Minnesota, we know better than you do for certain things. It led to a resentment and a frustration. I think some of that exists. I also think, though, the bigger deal of the ability to persuade someone to say, hey, I know we don't agree on everything, but I think you should go this direction. That is kind of lost. So that's the part where it basically becomes, you know, a base campaign, which base is going to have the most people to show up. And at one point, you could clearly feel that there was much more excitement on the Democratic side. But I think a lot of things have changed, and the excitement or the level of engagement, when you talk to some of the folks campaigning in the suburbs for Republicans, it may not match the Democrats, but it's certainly gotten closer.
Brad called in to say from Minnetonka, I'm a millennial. I voted for Obama in 2012, didn't vote in 2016, voting straight Republican this year. I'm not a victim, like everyone's telling me. Our country needs to move in a more positive direction. Hey, Mike, I think I got your title wrong here. You're a principal at Velocity Public Affairs. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. I can't keep up with the moves, but really good to chat with you again. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Carrie. Thank you.
Steph off the blog.
Katie says, I'm a 24-year-old millennial voting with a sense of optimism because I have reached out to my friends of a similar age, and some of them are voting with real purpose and optimism in the midterms for the first time.
Call here from Noah in St. Paul. Hey, Noah, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you're thinking about this question.
Yeah, I'm a evangelical millennial pastor, and mm-hmm. I've always been an independent.
Uh-huh.
And this year I'm voting straight Democrat down the ticket.
How so?
And as a referendum on our POTUS, because I just want to roundly reject that narrative of fear, xenophobia, and homophobia that you hear coming from the Republican Party and from the president.
Is this something that you would speak openly to your congregation about?
And my congregation, we speak openly about it every week.
Really?
Yep.
As in, you're talking about particular issues, or you're talking about candidates, yep, too?
Yeah, our congregation is a little, we don't talk about candidates, but we try and make space for hard conversations in our congregation. It's part of the ethos of why our congregation is who we are. We set out to do that because we realize that hard conversations aren't happening. And so we make space for it every week to try to hear from people who are coming from a different perspective than us. And, you know, we have people who right and left, gay, straight, and otherwise, all come to the table together.
No, I'm really glad you waited on the lines. I know it took a while, but really good to have your view.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And I appreciate this morning hearing from so many of you from different political shades and different political views. Good to hear about whether you are voting with a sense of obligation, you're voting with a sense of optimism, you're voting to send a message. And millennials, I especially want to hear from you because we're seeing these polls that say only a third of eligible millennials will vote. I know Minnesota often outpaces the rest of the country, but I want to hear how you're thinking about those questions too. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Steph Curtis has the live blog going. You can find it right on the NPR News homepage. And I'm on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. So we're bringing Denise Cardinal in now. She is executive director of WIN Minnesota, and she's with us from St. Paul. Denise, long time no chat. Good to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to you too, Carrie. Thanks for having me on.
I really wonder if you heard some of our callers call in to say, doesn't really make a difference. Yeah, they try to make Democrats and Republicans sound all that different. What's your answer back to that?
I mean, I think especially since the last election, what we're seeing is that people are becoming more engaged than ever before. I mean, You know, personally, I've had friends who have never really been that political, who've said, like, I don't really quite get what your job is, what you do, who this cycle, this weekend, were delivering home-cooked meals to our, you know, get-out-the-vote centers, who are asking me how they can get their parents involved in northern Minnesota or in other states. And so, you know, I'm just seeing, you know, I'm hearing from my friends and colleagues in other states, you know, in Texas, you were talking about millennials. I think that the early vote for young people is up something like 500%. I mean,
wow.
I'm seeing so much more engagement than I ever have. I've been doing this for 20 years. And so I think my hope is, knock on wood, you know, salt over my shoulder, fingers crossed, that'll bode well for Democrats tomorrow. But I'm just seeing so much more engagement than I ever have before. And it's really exciting.
Nancy says on Twitter, I'm voting with optimism this year because I truly believe my generation has the numbers, power, and perspective to influence the outcome of the elections we're facing, and the energy and enthusiasm from my peers for getting out to vote right now. It's been so encouraging. Steph off the live blog.
Dave says, voting because I can't look in the mirror mornings unless I do. This is the first year I ever door knocked for a campaign. I did it out of a sense of hope and fear both. Hope that it will make a difference and fear of what will happen if I fail to do as much as I could to counteract a general slide toward the dark side, not the better angels of our national nature.
I think that's interesting. So we were voting. We were talking about voting a split ticket. He's kind of voting with a split perspective,
exactly.
Right? A split
little bit
brain
of hope, a little bit of
ways.
Terror.
Right. To the phones to Molly in Wisconsin. Hi, Molly.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call,
yeah.
Carrie.
What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool, crazy left-of-left, DFL, lifelong, money-giving, ridiculous Democrat.
And got it.
I work in Wisconsin, but I live in Minnesota, and I'm being called by my party to vote for Keith Ellison. Mm. And I've had some real problems with that. I've reached out to my party and I've asked questions, mostly following the debate wherein Mr. Ellison said, I'm not going to support laws unless I agree with them. That was just stunning to me. And my concern for the level of investigation regarding the sexual claims made against him, all those questions, I brought them to my party, and I have gotten two reactions. Number one, silence, and number two, something like one of the comments that was read earlier online, that it's only because of white privilege that I ask these questions. And being a little old lady Democrat, that's really hard for me to hear. And so I'm considering splitting that vote.
Okay.
And it's really hard for me because I read the negative speak against the Republican, and I weigh it against the negative speak, and I think, why am I in this position? Why do we have these kinds of candidates in front of us? So it's difficult for me.
Molly, good to have the call. Denise, I wonder how you're hearing what Molly's dilemma is here. I don't think she's going to be the only DFLer in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I know she's not, and I mean, I can't speak to the specifics of every race, but I think what she does raise about Doug Wardlow, the Republican candidate, is an important part of this. You know, I mean, I was thinking just the other day about Paul Wellstone. You know, Paul Wellstone, a lot of people forget, you know, he was like a hardcore campaigner. He was a gloves-off kind of guy when it came to doing elections. And I remember, I work with a lot of people that worked with him, and they said, you know, he always used to say, like, this is a choice. And this isn't beanbag. This isn't easy. And that's because policies make a big difference. And, you know, you have to have contrast. You have to have messages about the other side out there to help people make those choices so they know what's at stake. And when you look at something like in the AG's race, I mean, Doug Wardlow worked for an organization that has been named by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a terrorist organization. This isn't, you know, the idea that that office could go into the hands of someone who would actively use it and fire every Democrat.
Although, Molly, I have to say, Denise, I hear what Molly was saying, which is, why is that my choice? Right? I think that's a fair question.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, to my point earlier, I think what we're seeing in this election in 2016 and in 2018 is a lot of state parties really taking another look at how they do get to the candidates. And I'm not that involved with the day-to-day activities of the party, but what I do know is that they have been taking a look at how they can make sure that they have great candidates that can come forward, and younger candidates and candidates that have energy, so that they can be the ones on the ticket, not just sort of the old guard,
right,
who have been there for a long time. And I know that that's been a big discussion within the Democratic Party in Minnesota and nationally.
As it should be.
Right, exactly.
Call here from Doug in Willmar. Hi, Doug. Are you also a ticket splitter? This is interesting. I didn't expect to hear from so many of you this morning.
I am a ticket splitter. I've been a union representative for 36 years, and I'm retired, 69 years old, and I am going to be a ticket splitter.
What's your calculation there?
What's that?
What's your calculation on splitting the ticket?
My calculation.
As in, I feel like I have to do this year because?
Well, you know, I'm tired of politics over policy. And that's in our state legislature and our federal legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be an example of who I see as a for the common good candidate. Colin Peterson is an example.
I see. So he's a DFLer, but you will also be voting for some Republicans.
I most definitely will be.
All
yes.
Right. Doug, I appreciate it.
And in the last election, I did vote for Donald Trump, believe it or not.
Good to have the call. You are a very interesting voter. By the way, since we've mentioned Trump, Denise, I want you to listen to something that the president has been saying on the campaign trail. Here he is.
Get out and vote. I want you to vote. Pretend I'm on the ballot. And don't worry, we'll be on the ballot in 2 years, and we will do a landslide like you haven't, like you wouldn't believe.
I know that's unusual, Denise. Take your Democrat DFLer hat off and talk to me about what it means when a president says that kind of thing in a midterm election.
The part about having him on the ballot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing is, traditionally, history has shown that in midterm elections, that the party that is opposite of the president tends to do really well. So I would, you know, look to 2006. Here in Minnesota, we picked up 19 legislative seats. I think that, you know, saying that he's on the ballot is obviously recognizing the fact that he has a big influence on what's happening this election. I mean, like I told you about my friends who all of a sudden are now volunteering, and at a time when they didn't do that 2 years ago, he has motivated people, and I think on both sides, because he's in the news every day. Right. He is a big part of people's lives in a way that we haven't really seen, I think, in a long time,
good,
where a president's really getting
point.
So much attention. So,
right.
Of course, it's going to have an impact on this election. Democrat or Republican, people are paying attention to him. And so I think it's sort of just like an open recognition that he is, as you've been hearing from our callers, right? Like, he is having an effect on people's vote choice this cycle.
Yeah. Steph off the blog.
Ian says, I'm among the millions of GOP supporters who avoid conflict and ridicule by being silent. No yard signs, no bumper stickers, no arguments, but we will be coming out in force on Tuesday. I predict another massive upset that Dems don't see coming.
Really? Like the so-called silent majority?
Mm-hmm.
Denise, this is exactly what Democrats are worried about, right?
It's very true. I think that we all have a little bit of Democrats, particularly have a little bit of PTSD. I will say that one of the things I've seen a lot of folks in my field do, though, is be a little bit more attentive to the research and getting different kinds of research. So, knock on wood, I don't think that the surprise will happen this cycle. But I do want to raise something that I think gets kind of lost when we talk about how close things were in Minnesota. I know that you were talking with Mike Zipko,
yeah,
the Republican operative, about this before. You know, I always have to remind people that, you know, Donald Trump only got 2,000 more votes than Mitt Romney. So he really performed, in theory, like a Republican would perform in Minnesota, with a couple thousand more votes.
It might have been where those votes came at. Yeah, Denise, go ahead.
And I was going to say, the difference is the third party vote, right? Which,
yeah,
from 2012 to 2016 was more than three times that. And like you said, where those votes came from,
yeah,
right? We saw people who we did not expect to vote and particularly exactly. in rural Minnesota, who didn't vote at all in previous elections.
Like maybe our friend on the live blog
exactly.
there, right?
Show up and vote. So you know, I don't want people to sort of think that somehow there are. I just think it's really important to point out, like I said, that he really did perform just in general like a Republican with only 2,000 more votes.
Denise, where are you going to be tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night we're going to be, after I get done doing another round of delivering food to our Get Out the Vote centers, I'm going to be at the DFL headquarters in St. Paul with my friends and some family members celebrating, I hope, again, knock on wood, as we watch the election returns come in.
Really good to talk again. Thanks much.
Thank you, Carrie.
Denise Cardinal is Executive Director of WIN Minnesota. I want to take a call here because we mentioned Jesse Ventura from PAM in Montevideo. Pam, you have a connection to Jesse Ventura, is that right?
Yeah. Hi, Carrie. This is Pam Ellison.
How are you? Good to talk again.
Great. I'm living in greater Minnesota now.
Wow.
And I'm really, really enjoying it. But the one thing that I wanted to talk about, Carrie, is that, you know, I think one of the things that we forget is that the general public is really totally responsible to educate themselves about who they're voting for.
Yeah.
And when these negative ads and things appear, it's really important for us to decide what is important to us. And in order to do that, like for me, I'm an independent. I'm still an independent. One of the things that I think is getting in the way is the party system. People become loyal to the party, and then there becomes all these deeply entrenched partisanship issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there was a way for us to run candidates like we do in municipal races, where they don't declare, people sometimes know their affiliation, but it's not the driving force of a municipal race. And if people could just vote for the best candidate with the best ideas and the best character and the best integrity, that would be the best thing they could do.
I mean, that is exactly what Jesse Ventura said. And by the way, Pam, I don't know if you heard the interview that All Things Considered did with him, but when they asked him what his legacy was, it was mm-hmm. you can win an election. I mean, if you get out there and you talk about the ideas, no election is out of reach. And I've been
in touch with Jesse in the past year because I'm an economic developer out in this area, and I did a big conference for farmers on industrial hemp, and so he did some radio spots for me out here. But and I think Jesse, you know, people say everybody was surprised that he won, but if you were on the trail with him, you knew that he was going
you
to.
Saw it coming. Pam, so good to hear from you again. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, Carrie. You're doing a great job. Hang in there, girl.
Thank you. Election Eve special coverage continues on NPR News. Stay with us.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.